Welcome to the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development at Durham Technical Community College. Our monthly forum features Chapel Borough's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The discussion is sponsored by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to business and for business. More at opentobusiness.biz and by Durham Technical Community College, Durham and Orange County campuses. Do great things. The WCHL Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum here for the month of October, and we are talking about UNC athletics in the post-NCAA investigation world. Now, leading up to a couple of weeks ago when the NCAA ruling came down regarding UNC, I don't think anybody expected that we would be totally done with this investigation or with the ruling or potential appeals or anything else that we were going to be considering from that. But just as a little bit of a recap, of course, UNC not sanctioned at any level by the NCAA for the investigation that has been going on in terms of new formal sanctions. I'm sure that we'll hear a little bit about this kind of time served concept during this conversation, but no new sanctions coming down from the NCAA regarding the UNC investigation. Getting into a lot of jurisdictional issues, what can and can't be proven under the NCAA's purview. To talk about this today, we have got Aaron Keck, the host of the Aaron Keck Show here on WCHL, also a university professor in his spare time. We've got Art Chansky, longtime sports commentator, and of course here with WCHL as well, and Dr. Deb Stroman from UNC's Kenyon Flagler Business School, also on the Faculty Athletics Committee at UNC, and a former college athlete herself. So thank you everybody for joining us today. I want to go around the room just to start this and get your reaction to reading through the ruling that was handed down by the NCAA. If you were like me, had to read through it four or five times to figure out what it actually meant. But Aaron, as you were reading through it, what was your initial reaction to that?
First of all, Blake, I got to point out that you have just jinxed us forever by using phrases like the investigation is over and post-NCAA.
That one is.
We said that once before a few years ago.
That one appears to be true.
So I was reading the ruling initially, and I think my thought is pretty similar to the thoughts that a lot of people have, which is, first of all, I think the NCAA, the Committee on Infractions, ultimately made the right decision in terms of what the NCAA as an institution or an organization is, by its own admission and by its own criteria, allowed to do in a case like this. But then that raises two very important issues. Number one, what is then the function of the NCAA if they are not allowed to get involved in something like this, where a university did something that, let's be honest, was quite egregious for a long period of time? If the NCAA can't get involved in that, then what can the NCAA really do? And then the second question, sort of the flip side of that, if the NCAA can't get involved, who can? Where is the oversight other than universities just policing themselves and us all crossing our fingers and hoping that the honor system works? So yeah, I think those are the two questions that came to mind.
That's kind of where everybody was coming from and is still coming from in a lot of cases in terms of university policies is kind of control your own area there, and then you've got your accreditation body and everything else, but you know, you're the master of that domain. Kind of Art Chansky, you've been on following this for as long as it's been a thing, and we talked about it a lot leading up to that about potential penalties, and everything kind of varied from I think it was the Maryland president saying death penalty and felt like the minimum that was going to be issued was a fine and probation. You feel like fine and probation, and you move on and you count your blessings if you're a UNC. I know we were talking about it in the immediate aftermath of the ruling. What was going through your mind when it was nothing more?
Well, what went through my mind, Blake, is that however many millions of dollars we paid for legal counsel and legal defense here, it was money well spent. Because I read through that thing, particularly Sankey's statement, and basically he was repeating what we told him about what they could and couldn't do. And he was regretful that that was the outcome of it. But basically, they couldn't do anything because it was not in their jurisdiction in any way, shape, or form. They were trying to massage it to the point where, yes, it is in our jurisdiction. That response to, I guess it was our second or third notice of allegations that said it's none of your business, and they said, if such and such happens, it is our business. If such and such happens, it is our business. If such and such, well, it turned out to be none of their business, and our lawyers, who were very good at what they were trying to do, basically told them why they couldn't do it. And I also do think that they were as tired of it as we were. And them thinking about the federal stuff coming behind this, I don't think that they really, in their own jurisprudence, couldn't take on Carolina in an appeals case. And I think, from what I understand, it was the lawyers on the Committee of Infractions who told them very much the same thing that they told Penn State a few years ago. That was so far off the reservation, it was ridiculous, but this is still off the reservation for you. You're not going to win this in a court of law. And so, and the unique aspect of the case was difficult, because who do you find? If you don't have any jurisdiction over academics, and the school was, and the school itself, it lacked oversight in that, but it's still academics, so how can you penalize the university? So it was something that I think that they came to an unpopular conclusion on, and I think the narrative nationally has been wrong all along, and the narrative now, why sports writers and sports commentators are saying that UNC should give up being a university as it is. None of those guys, they all took the narrative from the NNO and put their own spin on it. But nobody really understands the extent of it. Debbie probably knows a lot more than we do sitting here, exactly how many classes were involved, exactly how many students were involved. It was a very small subset of a department, and there were some lines that were crossed, but it was not proven to be in the interest only of the athletes. And the most important thing is they didn't catch anybody cheating. That's the only way you can get into the NCAA domain, is by proving that one of those athletes cheated that rendered him or her an ineligible athlete when they were participating, and that then it is the NCAA's business, and they could never prove that.
And we'll round out this kind of opening statement portion of the forum here, turning to Dr. Deb Stroman, as we said, college athlete in her time, and then now on the faculty at UNC, Faculty Athletics Committee. You're kind of at the crux of a lot of this, so what's going through your mind in this kind of little couple of weeks after this ruling?
Well, the first thing I'll say is definitely a feeling of relief for the university. I wouldn't say it was so much a sense of relief as in we got the decision that we wanted. Maybe that's 25%. I would say the relief is around that it's over. The cloud has been lifted. And so even though the university has been trying to move forward, still knowing that there's another meeting, there's another investigation, there's a committee on infractions, so finally it's over. And I was very, very happy that no one that I know of, whether it's student, staff, or faculty, or particular committees, gloated or cheered or said, nah, 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 nah. You know, the idea is to be respectful and understand that the bylaws, the way they were written, did not apply in our situation. For me personally, being involved and understanding a lot of the background, the details, the context, it was very logical. But as we know, a lot of NCAA decisions are not logical. So it was very positive to see that when you added everything up from a legal perspective, it made all the sense in the world that we would not be found guilty, so to speak. It doesn't mean that we don't have that we're completely innocent, as Aaron noted. Some very, very ugly things happened with our university. And as we continue to chat, we'll talk about all those reforms and things that we've done. But there's no sense of that we just walked away and that nothing happened to our university.
And I want to stay right on that topic with you. What's different today than kind of pre-Carroll Fault, pre-investigation?
Wow. So the first thing I'll tell our listeners to do is to go to the numerous websites, in particular Carolina Commitment. UNC.edu, which lists over 70 reforms that have taken place. We were so concerned in terms of our brand, our academic excellence, our relationship with our accreditation body, our respect in D.C. with our research dollars, and of course, our students, being concerned about how we deliver academic excellence. And so we took a very forward-thinking move to create a committee out of the Office of the Provost, where we actually looked at every process from when a student athlete is recruited to the university to when their career ends, their eligibility is over. And so we went through every aspect and identified what happens, how it happens, what are the different units on campus that that student athlete interacts with. And so with that, we developed reforms around it. The other most important thing, which is actually noted in the findings in the final document from the NCAA, is our changes around student athletes and academics, specifically on the athletic department side, because as we all know, this is an academic matter. So that came out of the Office of the Provost to do that work. But from the athletic department side, we made major changes with the student athlete academic area. And the website for that is APSA, APSA.UNC.edu. So you'll see a lot of those changes.
Let me just interject there. I really think that most of these reforms, if not all of them, were done ever before the Weinstein Report was commissioned. And to me, that's a sign that the university was very serious about what did happen and the reforms were going to be made. And, you know, I don't think right now the university can say that they got away with anything other than that it just happened to be the violations were not were academic and not within the jurisdiction of the bylaws. You know, I have to laud Bubba Cunningham and everybody who was involved in these reforms, because from my understanding is, Debbie, we're taking less academic exceptions now in athletics than we ever have. Very, very judicious about the academic support system. And what that results in is, I think, not only the potential to have a model program that after all of this, if anybody will believe it, Carolina has a chance to be the model program moving forward. Now coaches had to answer questions and just sort of tell their version of the story. I think it gives the coaches a much more powerful story to tell as they go out on the recruiting trail now. Yes, we did make some mistakes. You know, they were outside of the NCAA jurisdiction, but we took them very seriously, and we changed, and here were the changes, and here's what UNC athletes can expect as they move forward. And I think that is going to be such a powerful story for the coaches to tell that it's going to help make up for some of the recruiting losses.
It's easier said than done around the recruiting. But in particular, one thing that the university really wants everyone to be careful with in the language of being the model of anything right now, because this really did hurt us. And it's very difficult for our coaches. And I don't know when that's going to let up. Certainly winning a national championship in men's basketball helps, but it also just brings it more into the spotlight of you won a championship, but yet this happened. So we're not going to be a model of anything right now in terms of this NCAA and what happened academically. But certainly we can learn from it, and we can continue to tell our story about all these reforms that we've done. But it's a very, very challenging time.
We've got to take a break here, but we're going to come back. I want to talk about the responsibility of the university. Dr. Stroman, you mentioned the brand. Carolina spent a lot of time, a lot of years building up this persona, this brand. What's the university's responsibility, not only in maintaining that as a brand, but following through on it? I want to talk about that whenever we come back here on the WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I'll look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
The WCHL Community Forum for the month of October, talking about UNC athletics in the current state, that being post-NCAA investigation. Aaron, I want to start with you for this segment as well, talking about the responsibility of a university. You've spent a lot of your life in higher education as a student for many, many years, right? And then going into...
Many is the right number.
And then moving into the other side of that setting and being a professor. So what's the role of the university in that setting of making sure that not only are you accredited and checking off all these boxes, but service to the students in the classroom?
And also service to the community at large, both local and beyond. There are so many things that the university exists to accomplish. It's education, it's also public service, it's also research, and the list goes on. And there's also the role of the university in terms of creating a life for the students that are going through that 4 or 5 years, et cetera, of being at the university, not just in terms of what gets them through life for those 4 or 5 years, but also experiences outside the classroom that are just as important, if not more so, in terms of the overall education and the development of a well-rounded student who can then go out into the quote-unquote real, I say the real world, even though the university is part of the real world. There's no actual distinction between the two. But to go out into the rest of their lives and be not just effective on the job market, but also well-rounded, better people in general, and also positive contributors to society. Those are the many functions of the university. And the question is, what is the role that athletics plays? And for different universities, it's going to be different. For UNC, the strong athletics program is part of, and I think anyone, I think the most obvious example, the one that we always talk about first and foremost, is the students who played basketball for Dean Smith, right? Those students who went through that experience and come out saying, I am so much better of a person because I got the opportunity to spend 4 years working with this coach who is an amazing person who made me better on the court, but most importantly off. You have that same experience with student athletes who go through women's basketball, men's basketball now under Coach Williams, women's soccer under Hanson Dorrance, Jenny Levy, Carlos Samuano, all of these terrific coaches who are capable of producing a good product on the field, but also create better people off the field. And I think that's part of what athletics exists to do. But I've completely forgotten your question in the first place.
The responsibility of reaching that student and providing them not only with a grade and a degree at the end of it, but that education, that those life skills or the classroom skills or whatever they may be in that role to do at the moment. And kind of Dr. Stroman, building on that, Aaron talked about the UNC, the Dean Smith, the Carolina Way, all of that, that had such a stalwart brand across the university or across the nation. You mentioned the university's brand in our first segment. So what is UNC's responsibility in this field to the community, but to the student athletes who are working through an education while also producing in their athletic endeavor for UNC, whether that be these big-time college athletics or through the Olympic sports as well?
Well, I think that, and I don't know if I want to call it the elephant in the room or in this conversation at large, but talking about African Americans and blacks in all of this, And so when we think about UNC and its brand, as it's been stated, athletics oftentimes serves as the front porch for an organization. And so there is no doubt that our athletic department, our tradition of winning the championships, mean a lot around the world to Tar Heels, to the Tar Heel community, to Tar Heel Nation. Even if you didn't go to school here, people have drawn allegiance to our school. And so when you think about that front porch, when you think about athletics, you think about championships, as much as I am a big fan, supporter, and love Anson Durance and what he's done with women's soccer, that is a part of the brand. But there's no bigger brand than UNC men's basketball, which is truly defined by not only the coaching staff, but by these African American athletes. We think about UNC football has a tradition of winning, although it hasn't been a consistent winner. Everyone knows NCAA Division I bowl football starters, second teamers are usually African-American males. So what can we do in terms of our brand? I think our responsibility is to continue to showcase how we are not only taking care of our star athletes in the classroom, outside of the classroom, whatever their race or ethnicity might be, but also taking note of what we're doing for all students. And in particular, those African-American parents, those African-American potential recruits, those students who are wondering, why should I go to UNC? UNC, the state of North Carolina, has always been known as the most progressive state college in the South, most progressive state in the South. But yet we have something like this that happens and makes people question and wonder. Right now, the talk in the NCAA continues to be around the payment of athletes and whether or not we have some form of exploitation. Well, now is the time for UNC to step up, to be bolder in our hiring, in our retention, and to talk about these issues. And let's be that university where these conversations aren't pushed in the corner or they're completely ignored. It's a great opportunity.
I want to get to Art here in just a second there, and you put your hand up to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I am 100% on board with the idea that the way things are in big-time college sports, we are exploiting the athletes because there are a lot of people walking away with millions of dollars, and the only people who are not allowed to get paid are the ones who are actually on the field in the court making that money for everyone else. That's a separate issue. I don't know if this is a related question, Debbie, to what you just said, but I wanted to pick your brain about the difference, if there is one, between the experience of an athlete in the so-called revenue sports, the football and men's basketball, versus the experience of an athlete in the other sports, the Olympic sports that we don't think of as being the revenue generators. Is the experience significantly different for a student athlete who goes through those 4 years? And if so, what is the difference?
Well, there's definitely a difference, and it really comes with the commercialization of sport. And so even though the soccer player, the lacrosse player, the volleyball player is working out just as much as football, just as much as men's basketball, women's basketball, they don't have the spotlight on them. And so they're able to walk through campus for the most part, go to class without being asked for an autograph, not being asked to do a selfie, not being asked to come do an interview, whether it's national or local. And then, of course, there is no doubt that the athletes here at UNC have an elite experience. Even when I look back on my career and seeing that the plush locker rooms, the way they travel, the numerous pairs of shoes and equipment that's received, and that's for all of the sports. But still, when you weigh it against what men's basketball and football receives, and I'm not saying they should be equal, but there is definitely a difference. And the athletes know it, but they accept it because they know having that UNC, having the wonderful opportunity to wear the UNC to play here, it's that special and it's worth it.
Art, Dr. Stroman mentioned a second ago about the front porch, and I think that I'm probably a good example of that, of growing up in Alamance County, but it always felt like UNC was as much our university as anybody else. For better or worse, it was through Woody and the doorway of athletics rather than getting into the exciting research going on at the university. But you know, it does open that door to all of those other things. So you've been a little bit critical at times and then supportive at times of the way that UNC's handled different portions of this with the Weinstein report, and then the quote-unquote lawyering up and going at the NCAA directly. Do you think UNC has held up its side of the bargain in terms of this responsibility to student athletes and the community that we've been talking about?
Yes and no. First of all, I'm Carolina grad, and I am a tremendous supporter of the university. I've always said this, and when I've gotten into trouble with some people, it's because I said I support the university and the athletic department beyond any individual who works there. If Roy Williams wasn't the best coach for this university, I would be on the radio saying that. I said Butch Davis wasn't the best coach for this university because I didn't believe he was. But the point of this, Deb, you were talking about things that were getting close to the M word, and really at the end of this whole journey, hopefully UNC will lead a movement that will initiate change, because the people, only people who can change the NCAA are the people who are making the most of the money from it. So they're not. No one's going to stand up at a meeting by himself and say, I'm only going to pay a coach $1 million. I am not taking any more academic exceptions. Because that person, whether it be the athletic director or a chancellor, that person stands up and it's like that old scene from Animal House. Are you with me? Who's with me? You know, and he walks out by herself. And his or her cell phone rings, and if it's the athletic director, it's the chancellor. If it's the chancellor, it's a board of trustees, and they're fired because they understand that they're in the game. And we probably don't like to be in the game where it's gone, but you think you're dealing with problems now. If you're a school that can't play the game at the same level as other schools, you're really in a lot of trouble, and that's why they have to do what they do. Now, Carolina football is a lovely place to play football, but have you ever been to Clemson's factory down there and the things that they have? I mean, they have an internal football facility that has water slides in it, you know, things like that. Kentucky has so many more facility advantages than Carolina basketball does. So, you know, the point is, I think that we're trying to do it in a way with 28 sports that we're trying to do it in a responsible way, aside from what happened in the AFM scandal. I'm researching a new project, and it's funny, just in the last couple of days, I've seen two quotes from Roy Williams. One was issued in a 2009 book, and he said, "My primary responsibility here is to graduate students." And he got that from Coach Smith, of course, and Coach Smith believed that his primary opportunity. Let's be candid about this. Dean Smith came to a point in his career where he realized that he had to recruit the best players to continue having a championship basketball team. The best players weren't necessarily the smartest athletes, and they weren't necessarily kids who were going to stay in school 4 years. When he had some of those players, he did steer them to easier classes to help them with their overall academic regimen. But he had three rules about those classes, and you had to go to class, and Bill Guthridge and other assistants were legendary for looking through peepholes in classes to make sure that the kids were there or they'd be running the stairs that afternoon, in or out of season. The other thing is that you had to do the work that was assigned to you. And the third thing was that you could get help from the tutor, Bridges McSwain, but she couldn't do the work for you. So the whole thing there was, go to class, have to go to class, do the work assigned, get help, get a grade, and move on. And that's what all of those guys did. And the smartest guy to the guy who struggled the most with academics will tell you that it was set up for them to do that, but they had to do the work that Coach Smith wanted. And so people have said, oh, this goes all the way back to Dean Smith. Well, it does in a sense, because he was a guy who believed that every person on this planet deserved the opportunity to fulfill his or her potential. That was his mantra all along. And if they could play basketball, even better, you know. But he wanted to make sure that the students who came here got every opportunity, and he couldn't put them in the neuroscience classes with Steve Hale and, you know, some of the other brilliant that he had. But there was an academic curriculum set up for success. But just like on the basketball court, you can be successful only if you do the work and you put in the time.
But isn't that the responsibility of our university? If it is the university of the people, if it is the public university, and when you look, again, historical context of what has occurred in this state, what has occurred in America, and I'm talking about racism, then we have, I believe, an obligation to allow opportunities. I would hate for UNC to become this super, super elite university where you only have students who have, now we say, 4.2 GPAs and higher, and those who come from the upper, upper class. I don't think that's being responsible to the citizens of this state. I think every student that we admit, and I know based on not only personal observation, but knowing the people who sit in these seats where they're making these decisions, that they believe every student that we admit can go through UNC and they can graduate.
Aaron,
and
you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I know we got to wrap up this segment, but what you brought up there, Debbie, was a question that's not just for athletics, but it's also a question for admissions, right? Just in general. I mean, we think about, and I think when just ordinary people think about admissions for a college or a university, they think, well, the admissions department gets 10,000 applications and they have 3,000 spaces to fill. So they pick the 3,000 people with the highest GPAs and the highest SAT scores, and those are the people who get in. But the real work of the admissions department, ideally, is what it should be, and this is getting to your point, is finding the people who, A, are going to make the best sort of student body in general collectively, but also not treating admission to UNC as a reward, because that's not what it is. It's an opportunity. So if you can do the work, maybe you've got a 3.1 GPA or a 2.6 or something like that, but you clearly are capable of doing the work of the university. You've got these other skills and life experiences and these other items on your resume, bring you in and give you the opportunity that you might not otherwise have, so that in 4 years, when you leave, you go on and you succeed in life. That's the work of the university.
That's really what the proponents of Jim Delaney and his group that don't want to pay the athletes, and they say the value of the college education is way more than we think it is in terms of what kids learn and the opportunities that they get if they never went to college and what they go on to do, because what is that statistic in the NCAA ads about what percentage of athletes go on to
I would be a lot more sympathetic to that argument if it wasn't being made by someone who was making sure they kept $10 million in their pocket by making it.
That's got to be a wrap, Blake.
We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back. We still have the FBI, NCAA investigation, whatever you want to call that, going on into college basketball to get to, and kind of the role of the NCAA going forward, as we will be back on the October WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
Get ready to try something new, or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials, and you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead, visit durhamtech.edu and click on continuing education, and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum, 97.9 The Hill. We've been talking about UNC after the ruling coming down from the NCAA that there would be no penalties, no sanctions regarding the academic investigation that's been going on at the university since the beginning of time. But while that came down, it was just on the heels of something that really showed you how useless the NCAA is in so many cases, because They don't have the subpoena power. They don't have the ability to really go outside of their purview on certain things or compel any type of evidence in certain cases. It really is reliant on the honor system. And if you did anything, you need to tell us about it. And if we ask you to cooperate, we expect you to cooperate. But they can't make you. The FBI has a lot of other tools in their toolbox, and they use those in this investigation into fraud, I guess, is the overall umbrella that allowed them into this world. But the ultimate funneling of money from shoe companies through assistant coaches and to the pockets of some high school recruits and college athletes and their families. So in this world of the FBI looking into college basketball, Art, we'll start with you on this. This isn't surprising, I don't think, to anybody that's been following this, but what does this mean for college basketball, the way things have been operating, and the NCAA specifically in their role in executing this?
Well, first of all, I've known a lot of coaches through the years, very close to some of them, and none of them were surprised. Everybody says that this has been going on in one form or fashion for a long time, and many of them use the term tip of the iceberg in terms of what. But where the problem is here, and where it may turn out that no one at this point is going to jail, because at this point, shoe companies are allowed to finance AAU teams. They're allowed to give them shoes and apparel and spending money. They're allowed to pay the coaches to coach those teams. That's not illegal. What happened here was the line was crossed in terms of what happened here with John Blake and the football program a few years ago, where agents got involved and started using the influence of the shoe companies to steer kids towards schools that had those were wearing those shoes and apparel, and
ultimately to agents and financial advisors.
Ultimately to agents, right? For that small subset of kids who were first round draft choices, and that's a I've heard them say that the kind of fraud that they're talking about is a very nitpicking kind of fraud and easily to defend in a court of law. So some of those guys are probably, they might be out of basketball, but most of them are not going to jail. What they're trying to do, because this started with somebody who had, it was more of a an SEC violation that they were trying to track down, and he rolled over because he had some information about basketball.
Yeah, SEC not being the conference.
Right, not being the conference.
Just to
make sure that
and so
on the same
what they're
page.
Trying to do is use all of these people to get to really the biggest dogs of all.
Right.
And they think that they can change the sport if they find out who those people are and then put in some regulations that are easier to police.
But Dr. Stroman, in this world, things are happening. Somebody that is disconnected from following recruiting in its in the belly of it as I am, still heard stories about certain players going to certain schools because their parents got X amount of dollars. And you know what? A lot of these kids' families need it. It's going to be helpful for them, and we are making them go to a university for 1 year for whatever. We're not making them. They can go to Europe if they want to make a major life change for a year and do this. But whenever you're looking at this model, it doesn't seem to be sustainable. So this is going to happen. And I think it's naive, like I said earlier, to think this is limited to college basketball, but this is where we are right now.
Well, there's no doubt it's a thriving black market for teenage athletes, but it's based on the fact that the NCAA, the amateurism rules, can't compensate the athletes. I believe that capitalism will evolve. And so whether or not you have the FBI, the CIA, the SEC, the real one up in New York, or local people on your college campus, people want money. People who don't have money are going to find ways to get money.
Yeah.
And those who have money are going to want to keep making money. And so I don't think anyone can say that the FBI has never had anyone that was corrupt. And so I'm sure at some point in the future, whether it's now or in the future, that the FBI, there will be people who will be paid to act a certain way because that's how things operate. This is a billion-dollar business. And when you have someone who would love to go to a particular college or make you think that they're going to go to a particular school, because we haven't talked about personal responsibility here, some of these athletes and their families are taking advantage of this system as well to receive these dollars. I just think capitalism is going to evolve and this type of market will continue to thrive.
Because what do you expect? I mean, Mike Krzyzewski said very much the same thing. I mean, I'm not surprised he said, who knows if Duke's involved in it. I mean, they had one of the players, Corey Maggette, that was one of the original guys paid by an agent, Myron Piggy, way back in the late 1990s. And Duke claims that they never knew that Piggy got money before he arrived at Duke. And how does any school know that an athlete that they come in has gotten money along the way sometime? But unless it becomes free market, Debbie, and you can pay an athlete what some determination that he's worth in terms of the money that the sport is making, it's going to continue.
That's right.
Because, first of all, the families either come to their own conclusion or they have people telling them that your son is not getting anything for the money he's making for these schools. So they put their hand out with no regret whatsoever because they just think it's part of the game. So you can increase a cost of attendance and a few other things like that, but until it gets to the free market, where they're really getting a substantial amount of money for their skill level, then I don't think anything's going to change. And then you cross over the line. If you get to that substantial amount of money, you cross the line of amateurism and you get into where their schools and athletic departments and fundraising organizations can be tax exempt anymore. And that turns the whole thing upside down. Now, I think, personally, I think that's where it needs to go. It needs to go to the point maybe the college athletics isn't taxed on the multi-billion-dollar level, but there's a deal made between college athletics and the government that says, okay, we'll pay you a certain amount of money, but it has to be where that money cuts into the university's profits so much that in order to continue running their athletic programs, they have to cut back on expenses. They can't pay coaches $10 million
right.
anymore. They have to get out of the arms race that's going on. And in order to do that, you know, they have to have a reason to do that. Otherwise, it's going to continue to escalate. You can say it's out of control. Is it out of control now, Debbie? I think it's out of control.
Absolutely, it's out of control, but I'm saying it's going to continue. It's
right.
going to, it just keeps evolving. It's a
what
shell
level
game.
Of out of control is out of control?
And let's not say that by creating a free market and sort of opening up this, you're going to get rid of corruption, because you're not. There's always going to be corruption in any situation where this much money is exchanging hands and flying around and just available to be had. But I think about this, and I think back to kind of the early days of, and I guess still to an extent, the current days of the Olympics, where we have this ideal of amateurism and no one's getting paid for this, but there's money flying around constantly, and the Olympics are one of the most corrupt organizations in the world. But you think back to the very early days of the Olympics when Jim Thorpe, for instance, who's the greatest athlete in the world, wins a whole bunch of medals, and then they all get taken away because he got paid a few dollars for playing a baseball game. You fast forward to today, where we started this conversation this hour with the UNC scandal, so that's going on. The Penn State scandal from a few years ago, the other, if there's the trinity of huge sports scandals that have occupied public attention, there's UNC, there's Penn State, and there's Baylor is the third one. Also horrific accusations there. And in all three of those cases, the NCAA lets all three of those institutions pretty much off the hook, ultimately, with the exception of Penn State, and then a lot of those sanctions got walked back. Meanwhile, what's the name of the kid at NC State who took a class at Ohio State and now he can't play for a year? Mm-hmm. The NCAA brings the hammer down on that, and it's ridiculous. And just like back in the 19-teens with Jim Thorpe, I think we should look at that situation today, and certainly will look at that situation 50 years from now in hindsight and say, what were we even thinking?
Where do we go next? What's next for the NCAA, maybe as a model or college sports as a model? That's what we'll talk about as we wrap up the October WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the final segment of the WCHL Community Forum for the month of October, talking about UNC in this post-NCAA investigation world. Meanwhile, the FBI investigation into college basketball and money being funneled from shoe companies through college coaches and into the hands of student athletes and their families. But the overall question here is, what good is the NCAA at this point? Where do we go from here? Is it time to blow it up and start over with a new model? We'll go around the room to finish this up, and Art's got his little chompers going, so he wants to go first.
Well, first of all, the NCAA is not going anywhere because the people who could send it somewhere are the ones who are making all the money. I say that again. And the NCAA has to exist in its umbrella form as a nonprofit organization. And the basketball tournament is the biggest cash cow the NCAA has, and that really filters down all the way to all the schools playing college athletics, unlike the whatever they call it now, the football championship, where there's only 20 or 25% of it that goes below the Power Five conferences. But I do think reform in the NCAA is coming, and I think it's coming in the areas of investigation and penalty phase. I think those things will go outside, be sourced out to people who are not members of the schools, who might have a bone to pick with the schools that are being investigated and being penalized. We wanted Greg Sankey off that committee because we thought that there was but something between the SEC and the ACC that would lead him to try and favor. And he was the one who did come out with that statement: "It is our business. It is our business. It is our business." And then the lawyers told him, "No, it's not your business."
I would say there are a number of areas where the NCAA could have some reform that could really help. And I agree with Art, the NCAA is not going anywhere. But I'll just point out the role of the presidents. The presidents are the keys to all of this as they run the member institutions. But they're really in a very difficult place because they're learning on the job, because they have so many other responsibilities to run, administer a university. And so the second option is to defer everything to your athletic director. Mm-hmm. And you have to have just great trust there. And again, a bit of understanding. But I think the key role around the presidents and the NCAA, we really need to do more critical thinking analysis as to how we have to fix that.
Yeah, and I'm just listening to what you just said. I'm thinking back to 5-6 years ago with poor Holden Thorpe, who takes over as chancellor of UNC and has no desire whatsoever to spend his entire 5 years embroiled in this athletics controversy, and then ends up having to, like you said, learn on the job and also, as it turned out, for better or worse, trust his athletic director, and that led down the road that it led down. But I think the reform that I would like to see from the NCAA is something to address this fake amateurism model that we have, where everyone is getting, the players are getting paid under the table, and then the FBI comes in and brings down the hammer, but does nothing about the fact that everyone else is walking away with millions of dollars, and getting in front of the cameras and saying very nice, logical-sounding things about the importance of amateurism and the college experience so that they can keep the money in their pocket. That's the reform that I would like to see. I am a little bit pessimistic, along with Art, that we're going to see that reform because the people who are in charge of making that decision have every incentive not to, but that's the reform that I'd like to see.
So it's hopeless?
Nothing is hopeless. Yeah, absolutely right. Nothing.
So what's the breaking point then? I mean, I feel like we've gotten to this in some other areas where we think, well, that's never going to change. You're like, oh, wow, there it is.
That's the thing about the tipping point. You never know it until it arrives.
It won't be safety.
Walter Baez, the former executive director of the NCAA,
he
invented the term student athletes to keep it on the amateur side of it. But a reform, I mean, I'd love to see a reform where a student, an athlete gets a scholarship and can use it anytime he wants. For the any time in his life that he wants, and if he doesn't want to go to class while he's playing, he still gets 5 years to use 4 years of eligibility. But if the academic side of it has become a joke because it's almost impossible to do for some kids to fulfill their athletic obligation and be serious about school, let him come back for it. Let him use it whenever he wants to. It's there for him.
I think the change comes. America tends to wake up is when people die. And when young people die, and I won't get on my soapbox around gun reform and the number of shootings that have taken place, but they do tend to wake people up. And so I say we'll just continue to pay attention to the safety issues and what is working and what's not working. And if something unfortunate were to happen to a number of student athletes, we'll see that change.
Well, there seems to be student athletes being more involved in being their own advocate in some of these situations, and I think that could also bring about a case where it's not settled based off of voluntary abstention of power or anybody from the university perspectives, but maybe from a court order eventually of saying this isn't the way this is going to operate anymore. So we'll see how this continues to develop. But that is going to have to bring us to our conclusion here for the October WCHL Community Forum. Dr. Deb Stroman from UNC's Kenyon Flagler Business School, former college athlete, Art Chansky with WCHL, and Aaron Keck, host of the Aaron Keck Show here on WCHL. I'm Blake Hodge. This is 97.9 The Hill.
This month's WCHL Community Forum was presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Its mission is to support opportunities to put Chapel Hill's people to work and create economic prosperity for all, now and in the future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. $500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. So go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box and get ready to do great things.
Get ready to try something new, or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials. And you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead, visit durhamtech.edu and click on continuing education. And get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.